We have partners at Michigan Department of Community Health, and we have some Michigan Department of Community Health people that are now at Michigan State. I'm up. Good, thank you. And in the middle, we have community collaborators, because I really am a Michigan State faculty member but was out in Kent County, Grand Rapids, doing enhanced prenatal services research when we hooked up to this initiative at Michigan State and the Michigan Department of Community Health. So the bottom line is I didn't really intend to be a public health policy researcher, but indeed I am, and we've all learned a lot. I should tell you, one of my co-authors, Chris Megya, is up here in front. He's an economist. If you have questions, behind him are two people from the Kent County Health Department who can tell you the real story of when the rubber meets the road. So I can't lie up here. What the state health department told us is that Medicaid insures 40% of all births in the country or in Michigan, and that number moves around. That state and federal dollars really support enhanced prenatal services. And are you familiar with that enhanced prenatal services government? It's a matching Medicaid opportunity. Most states, 80% of states use it. It provides often care coordination, transportation, sometimes home visits or clinic visits. States are able to determine their own kinds of programs. But as we all will say, that despite the investments, the disparities persist, and what Michigan really wanted to know is how can we change our enhanced prenatal services programs? Maybe that's a way. So today I'm going to talk about a statewide evaluation of participation in the Michigan EPS programs by risk factors. So who's picking up the state-sponsored program? The development of a two-tier risk screening and assessment project. Program and a tool, some preliminary findings from a small study using the new tool, and some policy implications for program redesign. And again, this is at the state level. Oops. Sorry, I hit it twice. For the evaluation study, one of the key parts in us collaborating together is the state has a very large data warehouse that's a linked data set using WIC, Medicaid, and vital record data. So the evaluation study I'm going to show you has 54,000 Medicaid-insured women in 1 year. We're showing 2005. We've done this for 2003 and 2004. But I'm going to show you the most recent data. And then we have of 2,000 women in a convenience sample in six areas of the state that participated in a feasibility risk screener study. So we'll have some data on that. Well, I either get it to... Oops. Let me talk a little bit about the evaluation study. What the state of Michigan wanted to know, out of their 54,000 births, how many women, and you have to look crosswise on this table, got into their enhanced prenatal services program. And we took the broadest definition possible. If you got parking tokens, if you got group prenatal care, if you got home visits, if you had any contact and there was any Medicaid expenditure, you're in the YES EPS program. And as you can see, 26% of women in the state get it. Then we took risk factors and looked how many women with specific risk factors get in it. And as you can see, let's take smoking, for example. We have 18,000 women who are Medicaid insured during pregnancy that report smoking. And of those women, 28% of the women have any contact with our Enhanced Prenatal Services program. So you can look at alcohol use, less than 100% federal poverty level. What the state's saying is, we've got women with modifiable risk factors and they're not connecting with our Enhanced Prenatal Services program for many reasons that we'll get into later, but there seems to be certainly a broad range of areas where we could improve services. So the other thing we looked at briefly for them, they wanted to know how many women with multiple risk. Now, we assume that they would be more likely to get into our enhanced prenatal services program. So again, you have to look sideways. So we have women, and maternal risk characteristics were really based on vital record data. Remember, we're using a large data set. So we just use risk characteristics like age, education, alcohol use, smoking, certainly a limitation as much of this was vital record or WIC data. So we show that almost 17% of women with zero of those risk at the bottom were served by the program. Now, my local people will tell me, of course, this is a limited number of risk factors. So if I'm Hispanic and I'm sitting in front of you, the nurse, and I'm reporting violence, of course, I won't show up on the list of risk characteristics. So that is a limitation of the data. But it also said to the state that those women 0 to 2 risk might not need, I mean, right now we're funding up to 9 home visits. So in Michigan, the EPS program is a very broad, one-size-fits-all kind of program. So they wanted to know, how do we shake out women that have multi-risk and that might need more services, and how can we think differently about women with maybe not as many risks? So the state of Michigan put together a EPS redesign team with local providers, with health department people, with a broad range of stakeholders, and came up with some kind of core strategies. A process for rapidly identifying high-risk women, better than we have, certainly. Engaging those women in maybe very specific evidence-based interventions. For example, our smoking women. A service intensity match to risk level. And thinking about facilitating broad-based health education and referral services for women that present at lower risk. And this is a broad kind of perspective in terms of where they'd like to go. Okay, I'm going to be standing. Oops. Okay. So to do that, they first ask us to develop a risk screening and assessment tool, or look at the existing tools that were available. We did look at a lot of brief screener tools. Remember, we had a community collaborative stakeholder group. We like the Florida Healthy Start, quick, brief kind of tool. But in the end, the nurses kind of said to us, too, that once they have a woman sitting there, they'd like something that's a brief screener, but if they identified a risk factor, they wanted to do more in-depth assessment. So we ended up with a hybrid screener. An example, say for depression, we put a 2-question PHQ, I think that's the patient health questionnaire. It's an evidence-based tool. It is supposed to pick up. It's supposed to be a great depression screener. And if you got a positive screen on 2 questions, you went to the Edinburgh postnatal depression screen, which will give you different levels of depressive symptoms. So we also used for smoking a very broad smoke now. In the past, how much, a question by Mullen, but if you were smoking now, we went to the Fagerstrom nicotine dependence assessment, the 4-question assessment. So that's how the screener was put together. And I'm going to give you some results from 2,000 women in a feasibility study that answered these questions. I must say, myself and the university partners were very interested in testing the screener, but we're working with a state that wants to move very quickly on putting some new practices in. So there's always there's a tension there, but we've learned to be a lot more flexible at the university, I might say. Okay. So in the screener, there's a question that asks, were you using birth control for this pregnancy? That's the no birth control and yes birth control. We also asked, was this pregnancy wanted sooner or now? wanted later or not wanted now or ever? And those two questions allow you, we cross-tabbed them here just to show you, but it allows the nurse that's really doing the interview to get more information about what's happening here. So as you can see, first of all, you can't make the assumption that many that these pregnancies, even if they're mistimed, are not wanted. And as you can see, out of the 2,550 women, or almost 600 women, wanted the pregnancy sooner or now. For those that wanted later, again, you're looking across the row, 73% weren't using birth control. So all my friends that are talking preconception and interconceptual care, there's certainly a lot of room for improvement there. And I think the other piece that we're seeing is that of those 26% say they were using birth control and were birth control failures. Okay, if I'm a woman that didn't want this pregnancy now or ever, 71% of them were not using birth control. But again, 28% were using birth control and had problems using birth control. These are pretty sobering numbers that help us think about redesigning the program. Okay, tobacco use. So of the women who answered the brief screening question, we now know that 26% of the women are currently smoking in this sample, and 17 quit when they found out they were pregnant, that we consider still at risk. The screener in the next iteration will tell you the number of cigarettes they smoked, and I just rolled this up so you at a pack a day, lesser or more. And you can see that almost 9% are smoking a pack a day. What the nurses say, that the 5 A's, if you're familiar with advice, whatever, probably won't help these women stop smoking. It also tells you about the Fagersorm nicotine dependence. The almost 28% have moderate to high nicotine dependence and really will need some intensive kind of work. 89% have thought about stopping, and half of them have tried to quit. So the state really wants to get more involved in looking at the opportunity for tobacco cessation. I'm going to have to step on this thing. I was going to show you a very quick... Okay, I'm going to keep talking, and you'll see if you can get it to. When you first introduced the screener, nope, you went backwards. Can you go forwards? Stick right there, because if I don't get any further, I want to show you the depression. The last slide was really of the women that said they had quit smoking who weren't supposed to do the Fagerstorm. We did end up looking at that data, and almost 10% of them were nicotine dependent even though they quit smoking. Now, another area that's on the screener is depression. I told you that before. At the very top, you can see that 53% screen positive for depressive symptoms. And then when we did the EPDS of those numbers, we lost a few in the screening translation, but 34% were really scoring moderate to depressed or moderate to severe, which really lines up with a major depression kind of diagnosis. So this is just kind of interesting. Of those with a negative PHQ, they weren't supposed to fill out the Edinburgh. Some of the nurses told us that they wanted to do it anyways. And we did end up with another 10% that, even though they screened positive on the two questions, really had significant depressive symptoms. In the end, because I'm going to run out of time pretty quickly, in the end, the task force, the redesign team said, cut the PHQ-2. We don't care if it's evidence-based and everyone loves it. the nurses were finding that once they asked the EPDS questions, the Edinburgh Depression questions, it really gave them a lot more information to guide practice. Now I'm going to just quickly go through. We also looked at basic needs in the screener, things we know that 21% of women have food insecurity, housing concerns. I'm going to go through these and just talk about policy implications. So, in summary, we looked at the state data in terms of who is using enhanced prenatal services services, and there were many women with risk characteristics they were missing. The Michigan Department of Community Health decided very quickly to make the screener a required. Certainly, the university people were thinking a little quickly, but they wanted to move into this redesign. So now the screener is required for services. There's reimbursement for the screener completion. So this is where policy has to kick in to really move the redesign. Several of our communities, Kent County, who's two of the women are here right behind Chris, want to integrate the EPS program screener with the WIC screener, so we aren't asking women the same questions, which is a wonderful idea. The state is moving to a web-based screener, and in fact just put out a policy bulletin for review that would require providers to enter or upload that data so they can really track. We, of course, want to evaluate the performance of the screener, and we don't have enough screeners in yet quite to do that, but we're certainly making the feasibility kinds of decisions. And then the last point is that we want to coordinate in the state with other EPS-type programs, Healthy Start being one of the most important ones, because in Michigan, all the Healthy Start mothers, all the Healthy Start programs get reimbursement through enhanced prenatal services. So we're looking at some partnering there. Let me see if I can get to the last one here. We are very willing to share the screener. There are two places that you, and it's an iterative process, so the screener yesterday is not the screener tomorrow. You don't have to write this down because I have handouts up here that have the links to it. So you can either go through the Michigan Department of Community Health web pages, you can go through the MSU web pages, and if you can't successfully get it there, Jennifer Raffo, our project manager, said if you send her an email, she can attach those documents and send them to you. Okay? Questions later, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Questions later.